This past week, that is last Sabbath, Lenny and I were in Salina in Wichita. And when we were there, a sermonette was given that was quite interesting. The man giving the sermonette stated that he really wanted to vote for the presidential elections coming up. And then he received a letter from, it was a member letter from Mr. Franks. This would be at the end of July, first part of August, that Mr. Franks sent that out, because I remember we were down in Strong Rock Camp. And he said it really bothered him. He didn't like to receive the letter at all because of what he read. He said really he wanted to vote in the presidential elections, not because he wanted to vote for anybody, but because he wanted to vote against someone. In other words, it wasn't going to matter who would be running for office against the present president of the United States. He was going to vote for them. It just wouldn't matter. If somebody died as primaries or the election got closer, primaries are pretty much finished, then he probably would have voted for them. Wouldn't matter who, although I think it probably would. But he gave a sermonette that I thought was handled very well. It's an awfully big topic for a sermonette, but it was done very well. It was a one-point sermonette. And I think all of us remember receiving the letter from Mr. Franks. Basically, it was based on a letter that was written years and years ago, back probably in the 1950s, on who would Jesus Christ vote for president. And some of you remember that, some of you don't, because you weren't around at the time or you weren't in the church at the time, but it was an excellent letter that I remember sending out many times. I think it was in the 900 series that we had, from about 900 to 980, meaning that there were 80 or 90 or 100 different letter answering letters. The LAD is what we call it, letter answering department. But that sparked my mind as I got to thinking about it, because I made some comments. And then, of course, the Republican convention is coming up in Florida, if they're not blown away by a hurricane, and I don't think they will be, but that's coming up this next week. So we've had some of that on the news, along with our Missouri candidate making a statement that got into the news, although the Republican stance for the past 30 years has been basically what he has said, not quite in the science details of it all, if you read some of what he said. But again, this kind of hit me on, well, what does the Bible say? And perhaps because of what I see in the church and members stating, whether in print or, you know, talking, I realize that maybe it'd be good to just rehearse what we are here for. Why are we thankful for being one of the first fruits, as was mentioned in the sermonette? We have two major events that are coming. One is the Feast of Trumpets, and one is the Day of Atonement. And those two events, the fall holy days, show us that we have a goal that is unlike the world's. We're just not the same as the world's at all. Now, as I grew up, I can't remember my parents being involved too much in politics. The first presidential election that I even remember was in 1956. At that time, I was 12 years old. The 1952 election, I was 8 years old, and of course, that's a second grader, third grader, and nobody's going to pay too much attention. But I do remember that my parents were Republicans. However, actually, they were Democrats. And actually, it wouldn't have made any difference, because the Republicans wanted Dwight Eisenhower to run for president for them, and the Democrats wanted Dwight Eisenhower to run for president for them. Do you remember that? If you read the book on Truman, you can see Truman in some of his letters, or maybe he didn't print the letters, but some of the statements about wanting a general, a very popular general, to write. So he was popular on both sides. And he was going to be president no matter what, unless there would have been an assassination. But we've grown up with these elections. I remember in 1960 going over to our history teacher's house. It was Davy Crockett's mother. The mother had lived a long time. Her name was Mrs. Crockett, and she did have a son named Davy. I still remember that. But anyway, We stayed there and watched the election results till about 12 midnight. The cemetery votes out of Chicago had not come in yet, so we didn't really know the outcome of the election until a little later on. You, of course, remember that election and all that came from that. Didn't pay too much attention to it, but as I got into the church and started, in fact, my first feast was the Feast of Trumpets. First feast, and that was great because if we would have had atonement, I think that would have been a problem. You know, what kind of church am I into now? But it reminded me immediately that Feast of Trumpets, and we think of usually the seventh trumpet, not the first six, but certainly the seventh trump brings in Jesus Christ as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And that's what we begin thinking of as soon as we come into the church. Also, we think of Satan the devil and atonement and him being put away. And not only him being put away, but everything he stands for, all of those demons that work under him and all those people who are influenced by those demons, society at large, and our dignitaries, the ones who are in offices, not just here in the United States, but taking a look at the whole world. And sometimes we think, well, Satan has a grasp on the political systems outside the United States more than inside the United States. But in reality, if Satan is the god of this world, which he is, then you start thinking, well, maybe we're a little bit deceived and maybe a little bit too involved. So I have three parts to the sermon today. One is looking for God's kingdom. Number two is respecting God's authorities. And I think that's one that might hit us all in the church. And number three is separating ourselves from this world's politics and governments. Separating ourselves from this world's politics and governments. So we're going to start with that one and work back. Separating ourselves. If we go to Daniel chapter 10, and we do find a lot about the government system here. And as I speak here, we want to remember that Daniel was actually a very top official under about three of these leaders, of the major leaders, Nebuchadnezzar being the first. He worked under him. And when we see that, we realize that he was looking for God's kingdom. He was the one who interpreted the vision of Nebuchadnezzar and knew what was going to happen throughout the ages. Daniel 12 tells us that he didn't know all the details, that he wouldn't understand a lot that was being given to him, but he would rise in the resurrection at the end time, and the wise would understand. But he understood overall that the Gentiles would be ruling until Christ returns, overall. Not, you know, every year, but overall that would be the way it would be. Four Gentile kingdoms. And he realized then that this world definitely was not God's world. It was not the world of Jesus Christ. So in Daniel 10, we see that Daniel had quite a vision, starting out in verse 10 of Daniel 10. A hand touched me, and I believe this is the time he had been fasting for quite a long time. Yes, verse 3, 24 days into a fast here. Suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands, and he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. So here we have an angel being sent as a messenger from God to Daniel. While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling. Then he said to me, Well, don't fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. Verse 13, but the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. Now, I've always thought of that when I think of the governments of this world, when I think of people and their thoughts about the Illuminati, you know, the conspiracy theories that have been out there, and they are theories, but certainly there's always substance to stuff that comes to us. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist or an advocate of conspiracies. Nevertheless, we do realize that people do want to influence what goes on in this world. It's just that they haven't been able to, in the last 300-400 years, influence as much as they would have liked. there's always things that get in the way. But again, there are conspiracies, for sure. Always have been conspiracies, but they don't always end the way the conspirators want. So you have then an angel that was had been withstood, had been prohibited from going to Daniel by this prince of the kingdom of Persia, which tells you that there's a lot happening in this world, in the unseen world, that we don't even think about because, of course, it's unseen. We walk around not seeing the angel that God uses to protect us. I think we take for granted the angelic protections we have during the night, the angels protecting our children. But when we have a blessing of children, we do know that we ask God to put his angel about our children. And we're very thankful for the blessing that God gives us of these unseen forces. They are servants, God says. So we know they're out there. And we can tell stories maybe of some incidences where we thought we may have come into contact with an angel. They disappeared. They helped us. They were there. And all of a sudden you look around and they're not there. So we have stories such as that. And it is true that there's an angelic world involved in the governments of this world. So he goes on to give understanding to Daniel as to what's going to be going or taking place in the latter days. Nevertheless, the point of going to Daniel 10 is there's a lot going on in the governments of this world that is influenced by Satan's, I don't call them angels anymore, they're just Satan's demons. A lot going on. We don't know how much totally, but a lot more than we might suspect because Satan is the god of this world. That's why I said two major events are coming that have a lot of influence on us, and that is trumpets and the Day of Atonement. When Satan is put away, I think we're going to see some major changes in everything, maybe more so than we might even imagine. If we go over to Daniel 7, we see here, and I'll just jump to verse 26, it's talking about this fourth kingdom, and that kingdom being destroyed. And then notice, verse 28, the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. So here you have a dominion that is controlled by Satan the devil, by this beast here, over the fourth kingdom. Then the kingdom, verse 27, that was verse 26, I'm sorry, my eyes thought it was verse 28. Verse 26 and then verse 27, the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. So what's happening is God is going to take away the offices, the positions, the political responsibilities of the kings and the governors and the senators and the presidents and the dictators and give them to us. He is not going to give them back to those individuals. It may take a little while to change over when we read the prophecies. Nevertheless, the outcome after the first few years of the millennium is that we are going to be ruling. When we were in the Philippines, I asked them if they thought any of the rulers, the corrupt rulers, and they're almost all corrupt, in the Philippines would be taking over in the millennium. And I asked who would replace them. And I told them that if they were faithful in little things, that they had a lot more going for them than the rulers of this world. They had God's Spirit, for one thing. And, of course, they had the gifts that God could give them immediately in order to rule if they're faithful in little things. And I think it was it's a plus for all of us to think that way. So I asked the question, is God going to give responsibilities to any leaders in this world when Christ returns? And I would say, I think he's got it covered. I think he's preparing crowns and not for them. He's got it covered. Now, if there are responsibilities, I think there would be minor responsibilities, but they're not going to be any major responsibilities because, again, they are going to be also taught and trained. So no doubt there would have to be some minor responsibilities given. I think you will have responsibilities of parents over their children in their homes. You're going to have responsibilities in the homes of husbands and wives over their different areas of responsibility. And in towns, maybe you'll have some school administration, but again, the big jobs are going to where? I think the doorkeepers would be human beings, and I think we would have better jobs than the doorkeepers, right? I'd rather be a doorkeeper in the kingdom is one of the Psalms. So who will be in your cabinet? Who are you going to choose to be in your cabinet? Are you going to choose any of those officials that are running for office right now? And the answer is, well, no, especially not of that party, because you see, overall, we're bent one way, partially because of the freedoms we have in the United States. We're just bent in a certain direction. We're not used to certain systems, as other countries are. But we then ask the question, does God consider political leanings before he calls someone in the church? You ever thought about that? And the answer is, I don't think so. I don't think that he considers. And we think in terms of the United States, don't we? So is he going to call a socialist in France? Because basically, socialism prevails in France and in many countries. Is he going to call people out of a nation where they pay 50% of their money in taxes? That'd be probably Israel. And I think that would not keep God from calling anybody, would it? So you start thinking and reasoning in terms of the world that God is going to take over, and all of a sudden some of these things become pretty minor overall. How concerned is God with our freedoms being taken away in the United States? Does God call anybody in Rwanda where they have all their freedoms, or do they? You know, you start thinking from a worldwide point of view and God's calling, and whether he really is that interested in the democratic, republican type of government we would have, it's a republic, I believe, or whether he's that concerned with the dictatorship in some of our countries where he calls people. If you're living in Rwanda, do you think there's much complaint about the dictator, or do you think there's many TV shows? Do you think there's much political bashing? Do you think the riot? There's a group of girls in Russia. I won't even name the name because it's like, how can they name themselves that name? But anyway, you know, maybe some of you shake your head, that they were put in jail for 2 or 3 years because they were in a cathedral and they had a dance or a song. They're a singing group against the government. So they're free. They didn't have much freedom. Now, what if you lived over there under Putin away is what God is going to do. But so you live over there, and is God that concerned? Are there radio programs, TV programs that you can listen to for hours at a time, as we can in the United States, talking about the government, or would those people being in Russia really be that concerned about it? The answer is, I don't think they're going to be concerned at all. Not one bit. Not one bit. And they can't do anything about it anyway, can they? As if we think we can. As if we think we can, because actually, when you stop to think about it, we can't do much about it. So in 1 Timothy 2 and verses 1 and 2, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verses 1 and 2, we see what Paul said. And there's about four major sections in the New Testament which tells us the attitude that we're supposed to have. But 1 Timothy chapter 2 is one of these areas, verses 1 and 2. I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, wherever you are. We're talking to members who would be in Timothy's congregation. He would be the one teaching them, but this would be a principle no matter where a member would live throughout the world. For kings and all who are in authority. So here we're supposed to be praying for the kings who are in authority. That means that back then, there were members living under those kings, right? And they were to pray for them. And I don't think it was like Fiddler on the Roof where it said, what blessing do you have for the, what was he? It wasn't the king, the czar. Yeah, what blessing do you have for the Tsar? And he said, well, may God bless and keep the Tsar far away from us. That was the blessing, if you remember the movie. You kids don't remember it because it was 20 years before some of you were born, I think, Fiddler on the Roof. So anyway, we pray for them, and what are we praying for? What is our motive here? That we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. So that was going to be good enough if the king would allow us to live in peace and to be able to meet in a meeting like this in peace and have that freedom. That was what we're to be thankful for. And of course, going along with that, it would be the ability to preach the gospel freely. So this is what you want to pray, that no matter where you are as a member, that you can do that much. I think we have those freedoms in the United States overall right now. We don't even need to worry whether it's an independent party that is running for office or a Republican party or whether it's a Democratic party running for office. We don't even need to worry about that. We have those freedoms. We can be thankful that we do live in a country where we have blessings that are more than almost any country in the world. We have tremendous blessings. So country to country comparison, we have little to complain about. We really do. We are the richest nation, almost the richest nation. The United Emirate Republic, maybe United Arab Emirates or whatever they are. I think they have a per capita income that's, $150,000 per person, something like that. But I don't know if they're the ones that have all the money either. But we are in a very blessed land. So, does God have people who live under dictatorships that he's calling? South America? Philippines? It's a democratic country, but can they trust those people? In Rwanda, do they have that many freedoms? In Egypt, do they have that many freedoms with the Muslim Brotherhood now in office? Not really under control because I think the military is still in control, but what do you do if you're an Egyptian? And the answer is I don't think you have radio broadcasts where you have anybody dissing the military government or the Muslim Brotherhood at this time. You just don't. How would you like to be a Christian in Syria, a real Christian in Syria right now? I don't think I would, but would you complain about the freedoms you have then? Would we be involved at all? Would we even worry about who's in the government system? And the answer is, in many countries, I think we would not, it would never be a part of discussion in the Church of God. Would not even be a part of discussion. It would be so far away from our thinking, we would just be praying, thy kingdom come, and basically that would be it. I think some of you remember that I did give a sermon a few years ago. I think it's probably been 4 years ago, the last election, maybe 8 years ago. But there's just some highlights, even here in the United States, I'd like to bring out. There have been quite a number of presidents in the United States. Which one is this? The 47th, 8th, 9th? I don't know. It's climbing. These presidents had a lot in common. John Tyler, Millard Fillmore, Calvin Coolidge, Harry Truman, Andrew Johnson, Chester Arthur, Theodore Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, and Gerald Ford. What do these men have in office? Have in common, that is? None of these men came into office for the first time by the election of even one American vote. Not one. And you start looking, and you remember the sermon. I'm not going to go through it, except to hit maybe a couple highlights here. But you take a look at these men, and then when you stop to think of the question, who are you going to vote for? And the answer would be, well, my man's not running. Certainly, that's what took place when you have these men becoming president of the United States. These guys were not running for president, unless they were and they lost, and then they were put in office because they were second in line. Remember, years ago, when the nation first started, it was the guy who got the most votes who was president, the guy who got the second most votes who was vice president. Remember that from your history? That's the way it was. So you go down with a couple of these highlights, a couple more here, and that is you take a look at William Harrison, Zachary Taylor, Warren Harding, and Franklin Roosevelt were all died in office, natural deaths. unless they were smoking too much marijuana or, you know, taking too much cocaine, I don't know, you wonder sometimes. So what about these men? You know, we had no power over the fellow who would follow them. With Abraham Lincoln, James Garfield, William McKinley, and John Kennedy, they all were assassinated. In fact, every 20 years from 1860 through 1960, a president of the United States was assassinated. And that's why you didn't want to run in 1980, right? Or 2000, although I think that trend pretty much stopped. We had minority presidents, at least 14 minority presidents, where less than 50% of the American people wanted them. Less than 50%, they got in anyway. And another final highlight, in 1824, 1876, 1888, the loser won. How did that happen? Quirks of the electoral system, basically. So if you can actually have a man winning the popular vote then and losing the election, is what it boils down to. So we get all excited, we think, well, what's happening here? Well, we see that we need to separate ourselves and look at what God is doing. So that's where I come to the next point, and that is we need to respect the authorities because God has something in mind. So respect of authority. John 19, verses 1 through 11. John chapter 19, verses 1 through 11. It's interesting when Jesus Christ was talking to Pontius Pilate, John 19, Pilate took Jesus and scourged him, and the first verse there, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns on his head, gave him a purple robe, and then they mocked him and said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And then Pilate went out again and said, "I'm bringing him out to you. I find no fault with him." And Jesus comes out in verse 5 wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And then Pilate says, "Behold, the man." Verse 6. When the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him." And Pilate said, "Well, I find no fault. You know, why should I crucify him?" The Jews said, "We have a law. According to our law, he ought to die because he made himself the Son of God." So when Pilate heard that, he was afraid. So he went again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" And Jesus gave him no answer. And remember, basically, was it Paul who said that Jesus Christ gave a good witness? Remember that? I think maybe it's in Hebrews. Do you know, verse 10, interesting, "Do you know that I have the power to crucify you and the power to release you?" And look at what Jesus Christ said. "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above." Don't you realize, Pilate, that you wouldn't even be in this office unless God is the one who put you in that office? Then he went on to say, "Therefore, the one who delivered me to you as the greater sin." He didn't even blame Pilate. And Pilate in the resurrection will be thankful for that verse. He'll probably get his Bible out in second resurrection and read that just to be assured of what Jesus Christ said. Do I remember what Christ said? So again, "You could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above." Now that says a lot about what God is doing. He is definitely involved in holding back events or speeding up events. He is the one that can put a man in office to use his gifts for good or for evil. He's the one who does that. So we come then to Romans 13 and verse 1. Romans 13 and verse 1. And here we read in verse 1, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. There is no authority except from God." Now, you and I can't say we're an authority over anything when it comes to government. Most of us can't. I did hear at one time that we had a mayor in the church. In fact, I don't think he was a church member's wife, and he was a mayor over a small town in Missouri. And then later on, actually was baptized before he died and came into the church. But there's no authority except from God. And notice, the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Now, if we didn't have that last statement, we could say, well, God can just keep people out of office. But in this case, the authorities that exist are appointed by God, and that's strong to me. So you think of dictators, and you think, well, they're appointed by God. They're there. And in all of this, I don't know where I put it. Maybe I even went by it already in another area. But remember, there are blessings and cursings that God gives us. And sometimes God gives us a man so we can be blessed. He uses our gifts. Remember Cyrus. Cyrus was a man that God prepared for the job. And he was appointed by God. God used him so that the Jews would be freed from Persia, was it? And come back to Jerusalem to reestablish the temple. So God can raise a man for good or for evil. But they are appointed by God. And it says, the authorities that exist. Now, which authorities are authorities that exist? And I start thinking, the United States, your high offices. I don't think it's talking about people over PTAs, do you? I don't think it talks about presidents of associations, you know, where you have 10 units and you have the president of an association. I don't think it's talking about that at all. I think it's talking about those who have influence over what's going on in more of a major way, not in the minor ways. So the authorities that exist are appointed by God. So we think, well, let's look back then to the time of Samuel when the people rejected Samuel's sons. And from a reasonable standpoint of view, you would think they had a good reason to reject the sons because those guys were men of ill repute, definitely. They had problems. So they wanted a king, and God says, look, if I give you a king, you know what's going to happen? Your taxes are going to go up. And also, that king is going to take your young men and put them in the military. And you're going to have a bunch of problems. Now, God chose Saul to be their king. And, of course, they had problems. Then God chose David to be their king. And then Solomon to be their king. And when Rehoboam and Jeroboam come along, Rehoboam stated, well, my father was tough on you, a lot of taxes, and if you think he was tough, I'm going to be tougher. Remember that? That was the counsel that the younger men gave him. But these men were appointed by God. Solomon was appointed by God, but still, it was rough. Evidently, you had Solomon as a pretty rich guy, but his kingdom did suffer to a certain degree, although God did keep him out of war. Remember that? He kept them from having war. He married enough wives to have a connection with every single king and emperor throughout the entire world. You know, I think that's part of the reason you had no wars. Verse 2, therefore, whoever resists the authority resists God. You resist the authority, you resist the ordinance of God. Now, to me, that's very, very strong, and that's why I cringe when people use the last name of the president, even though I have made the mistake of doing so. But I cringe when I see that because I think they're overlooking the office and they're going to the man. And that's where the problem comes. We overlook the office because it's the office that God gives them. The men are not necessarily qualified to be in that office. But again, God will bring along men sometimes to bring a nation out of problems. Even happened in the Roman Empire, where in the Roman Empire there was a stage where they were basically bankrupt, and I think that was in the early part of what we call AD, you know, the first 100 years of the Roman Empire. Guy comes along, is really thrifty, and brings them back up out of bankruptcy, and the Roman Empire lasts into the 4th century. Or is it the 5th century that they last till, the 400s? So you never know what God is going to do, but we certainly don't want to resist, nor talk against, nor disrespect the ordinance of God, do we? We want to be very careful about doing that. When we take God's name in vain, we can take God's name in vain. And the question is, too, should we be listening to people who are dissing, you know, for hours at a time, and there are major programs out there, and I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat, it works both ways. If you have a Democratic in office, you get somebody there, and they very disrespectful to the Democrat, you get a Republican in office, and it just switches gears, and all of a sudden it goes the other way. So it's happening all the time in this Democratic United States where we have all these freedoms, and with these freedoms, we can actually sin against God. So we have to be so very careful. And I'm not saying we don't recognize evil when we see it, but we still have to be careful. If you take a look at the rulers that were in power when Paul wrote this, this is Romans 13, and we figure that most of his writings were in the 50s and 60s AD. I pulled up Wikipedia, and sometimes it's not 100% accurate, but overall, in general, it does pretty good. And the guys that were in power, you think of this applying to the time of Jesus Christ. First of all, what was the guy's name? Wasn't it Herod, who was in power when Christ was born? Now, he was a very nice guy, innocent man. He had no resentment at all. He didn't worry about anybody taking over his office whatsoever, except that he did kill all of the young children under two. Now, we take a look at Romans 13 and we ask ourselves, did God put that man in authority? And if he didn't, would the prophecy have been fulfilled that Joseph and Mary would have taken Christ to Egypt? Prophecy wouldn't have been fulfilled. So you have a man who is put in power, who would be very jealous and envious because the king of the Jews is born. Well, he doesn't want that guy taking his position. Of course, he doesn't know that he's only going to live himself for a little bit longer. I think he lived till 37 AD is what I have down here. As far as the Caesar, Herod didn't live that long, I don't believe. But you have then a Herod, and he was there appointed by God to fulfill prophecy. So if you're living at that time and you're on a talk show, what would you say on the talk show about this guy killing all these children under two? Bad guy, let's get him out of office. Well, certainly he was very evil. But again, you take a look at the overall perspective and you think, well, what is God doing? Some of these fellows that were in power when Paul was writing this type of information. You have Tiberius Caesar, probably died of natural causes, but possibly assassinated by Caligula. Remember the, I think NPR had, or the, what is the channel where you have public broadcasting system, PBS. You have Caligula. The story of Caligula, not a very nice looking guy, almost looked like a girl. But anyway, he's a great guy. He was assassinated. This is the next guy after Tiberius Caesar, because there was a conspiracy involving senators and the Praetorian Guards. The guy that followed him was Claudius Caesar, and he was probably poisoned by his wife Agrippina the Younger in favor of her son Nero, whom Nero, by the way, I believe killed. Remember Nero? So you have a bunch of really nice guys ruling over the Roman Empire at the time that Paul is saying these authorities that be are there because they have appointments by God. And we can't understand that. You know, it'd be a much worse environment then than now, and especially when you read about what was going on in the government and how dissipated they were at the time. Nero comes along. He was known for his treacheries. He was known for assassinating people. And the story is that he played his clarinet. No, he strummed his violin while Rome burned. I think that's actually not true. That's just a story that got around. But anyway, he committed suicide after being declared a public enemy by the Senate. So you have Galba coming along, and he was murdered by the Praetorian Guard. And Paul is still alive at that time in 69 AD. You have Otho coming along. He committed suicide. That was while Paul was still alive. You have Vitellius, who was murdered by Vespasian's troops. We don't have that type of assassination ratio among our presidents in the United States, do we? And you have then Vespasian, who got rid of Vitellius, who died of natural causes. That was 79 AD. And then you have Titus, who comes along. Finally, he dies in a plague. But he's followed by Domitian, who's assassinated by court officials. Now, do you think there was a lot of problems going on in the Roman government at that time when Paul was saying, do we have to not resist our authorities and pray for our leaders? I think if we had that going on, maybe we'd even pray more for our leaders. They may need more prayer. But I just bring those things out to show you the context, the culture, the political system, when Paul wrote these things. Now, if you go to 1 Peter 2, 13 through 17, 1 Peter chapter 2, 13 through 17, this is Peter talking now and not Paul, but notice what he says. 1 Peter 2, 13, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. Who are we doing it for? Every ordinance of man. Now, people get really excited about government insurance, which started in the 1930s. It was called Social Security. That's actually the biggest Ponzi scheme also that ever hit the United States. If you think of Ponzi schemes, you have nothing left to give to those who were supposed to be recipients of those who started paying their Social Security in the 1930s, 1940s. Basically, it was used for the war effort. And for other efforts too. But people get all excited, and yet you move to France or you move to some of these European countries and they're socialist countries. I am not for, you know, I grew up in an environment where I like my freedoms, and I personally think that based on what I see with the insurance program, that I'd like to pay 1% of my taxes rather than follow the insurance. That's an option that we have because it is a tax, you know. Have you noticed that? You can pay 1%. So I wrote into the office and I said, well, let's do that. Let's just pay 1%. It's a lot cheaper. The best thing to be is very, very rich or really not rich at all if you really want to get ahead in this life when it comes to your Medicare, Medicaid type thing. Because if you're very, very rich, it doesn't matter. You know, if you're a multi-billionaire, if you win the lotto of $337 million, you're coming out with $225 or 240 minus 25%, you're going to have 180 million. I figured those things out because I want to know how I'm going to spend it. Right? You do. But so you're very, very rich. And if you have 180 million bucks in your coffers after tithes, I figured that one out too. So, you know, I want to make sure I have enough left over. How many of you do that? Who figure that type of thing? Am I only the covetous guy here? And there's a couple of you that admit. It's fun to do as long as you don't take it to your head. But you stop to think of the programs that are out there. We're still in a very, very good country. We still are very blessed. But here you see it says, submit to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. Why are we submitting? Because it's a government position. It's a position that is given by God. Whether to the king as supreme. So whoever we don't have really someone supreme in the United States. We have, you know, you have Congress and you have a system of lawyers, the Supreme Court. That's also another part of our system. And then you have, of course, the presidency. So you have kind of a backup system. If one gains too much authority, the other two can kind of quiet them down. But notice then it says, governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, yet not using your liberty as a cloak for vice, but as servants of God, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Honor the king. Now, is that what we're doing here in the United States? are we honoring the position of the individual God put in power? I guarantee you, Nero would not receive any respect from us. But even when God tells us to honor parents, he uses the term honor. Honor your mother and father. Some people can't even respect their mother and father because of the way they are, but we still honor our mother and father. So we don't have respect for a lot of these guys who come along, do we? And let's face it, we just don't. We can take a look at what they're doing, and definitely, especially if you get into the history, the private history of some of these men, it comes out after they die. How far do you have to go back? Do you go to FDR and you look at his personal life and say, I have respect for FDR in his personal life? And the answer is, well, no, you wouldn't. Even President Eisenhower, would you have respect for him? Are those rumors? What about President Kennedy? Is there respect? I think God chose the word wisely when he said honor the king. There's an honor to the office, but we certainly don't respect what they do. So we look at Jude 8 and 9, and we see how far it goes when it comes to biting our tongue in relationship to the rulers that God has put in charge. Jude, the book, of course, right before Revelation, and verses 8 and 9. Likewise, these dreamers defile the flesh, reject authority, and speak evil of dignitaries. Yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not, that is, Michael, who is a supreme archangel, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation, but said simply, the Lord rebuke you. So you don't rail, and what do we find in this society? We find these political pundits railing. I mean, they go on and on. In fact, I heard one guy that some have said they listen to all the time, and I saw him, I didn't watch him that much, but I think it came out on YouTube because he lost his temper. And I thought, this guy is really having a hissy fit, political hissy fit, is what he was. He really lost it. And so you do get upset, you know, at what goes on. If you take a look at some of the men that the individuals in power have appointed under them, you think, oh, brother, it's time for us to take over. It's time. That's where it should lead. It shouldn't lead to, we need another person under this same system to take over, because it's never going to change in this world. It just is not going to change. We need to be, and this is why I come to the fourth point, looking for the kingdom of God. Feast of Trumpets is coming up in about five and a half weeks. Look at the moon, and you see it's about one new moon to come and another new moon to start, and well, maybe one new moon to come and then the full moon after that. Whatever the case, it's not too far away when we are going to be reminded that the kingdom is going to come. How would Christ vote for president? He's going to put in office whom he wants in office, whether it comes from God the Father or Christ. They will appoint the person that maybe we deserve, or have mercy upon us and appoint someone that we don't deserve. The cursings of America come because of America's sins, not because of the man who's in office. We must remember that. The curses come not because, maybe I should say only because of the man who's in office, but because overall of the sins of the people. We go to Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, it specifies all those curses. And where do they come from? God said, because we sin as a nation. If we were a righteous nation, that would be different. But brethren, do we deserve a righteous leader right now as a nation? Do we deserve a righteous leader? And I would say, I'm not going to say. I'll let you answer that. I'm on tape. You're not. I'm actually not on tape either. But you know where I'm coming from with that. So we look for Jesus Christ to come. That's where we started with. Remember when we were baptized? We were in that pool, or in that tub, or in that creek, or in that lake. And I still remember being asked, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior? And I said, yes. Then it was stated, because you've accepted Christ as your Savior and your Lord and High Priest and your soon coming King, I now baptize you in the name of. So that's where I started, in that pool, and that's where you started, and we had a change right there. We came out of this world. We are not supposed to become emotionally involved. We're going to be involved. I personally like to follow how God manipulates things myself. I do. I do follow it. And I'm not saying that, you know, we hide in a cave. No problem with that. In fact, I wouldn't have this study of years and years of presidential elections if I wasn't interested in what goes on and how God does things. I think it's very interesting to see what happens. But we don't get emotionally involved any more than we get emotionally involved when Mizzou loses. I think we should get more emotionally involved when Mizzou loses. There we go. Okay, because we're in the city here. I don't know what you do if you're me, because I live closer to the Jayhawks, so I just come over here and get tarred and feathered, right? But we don't get emotionally involved. Except to say, thy kingdom come. If our emotions are thy kingdom come, rather than let's get a new man in office, and we're thinking of somebody that is physical, that's not where it should lead. Our emotions should be, we want Christ to come. Because there's no man that's going to take care of the problems that need to be taken care of. Colossians 1, notice what happened when we actually were baptized. Colossians chapter 1. It's quite interesting. Of course, we could go to other scriptures also where it tells us that we were raised with Christ. And of course, if we're raised with Christ who sits at the right hand of God, in effect, we're raised with Christ. It's talking in one sense symbolically. But we know then where our thoughts are going to be. But Colossians chapter 1, and let's go to, let's see, it would be verse 13, exactly. The Father has qualified us, and he's delivered us from the power of darkness. Now remember where Daniel was? And by the way, Daniel, do you think Daniel respected the individuals under whom he worked? And I think yes. Do you think he gave Nebuchadnezzar a hard time when he worked for him directly? Or did he give him his full talent, his full time? And the answer is yes. Do you think he respected Nebuchadnezzar who threw his three buddies into a fire? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. By the way, it is interesting what Joseph's name was. Zaphath, Nathath. By the way, take the test and you'll see if you get it. I missed it, I think. But he had a different name. Daniel was named differently, but he worked. And by the way, he accepted that name. It's interesting. Do you think he fought that? I'm not going to take a pagan name. Do you think that concerned him at all? The answer is, when they came to him, they didn't call him Daniel. They called him by the name that Nebuchadnezzar gave him. And he worked for Nebuchadnezzar and for, evidently, the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and maybe for another person in Persia, because I think Daniel went over there too, didn't he? Maybe I'm mistaken with my history, but he worked under quite a few men. And I think he respected the office of those men. But we are delivered from the power of darkness and translated into the kingdom of the Son of His love. So that's where we are And so on a daily basis, we say, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, thy kingdom come." That's what we say. First words out of our mouth is, "Oh, please do not. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Please don't give us a Republican. Please don't give us an independent. Please don't give us a Democrat." We don't say those things. We say, "Your kingdom come," because we see what is happening. The President of the United States doesn't have the power to do everything he wants to do anyway. No matter how many trillions of dollars he puts into the economy, he doesn't have the power probably where that money even goes. There's no way we can be delivered by human beings. God can use a human being to bring us out of a temporary problem, but we're going to go back into it. We don't learn lessons in the United States nor any nation in the world. So we are translated into the kingdom of the Son of His love. We pray for that kingdom to come. And then also we have a scripture memorized, and it is Matthew 6:33. And I think God is probably trying to tell me something, but in Matthew 6:33, I see that all the time. I wake up in the morning and it's 6:33. In the evening time, I happen to glance at my watch and it's 6:33. And it's like, it comes up too much. I don't see 7:45 that often. I don't see 8:22 that often. Maybe it's because I know 6:33 really well. Maybe that's part of it. But that's what I see all the time. Seek you first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. We're not going to get that righteousness in any kingdom of man. It just is not going to happen. So I hope as these days come up here that we remember where God has taken us. We're not in this world. God has brought us out of the world. We pray for our leaders in the world. We ask God for peace. We ask God not for the worst for them. I don't think we pray that anything bad would happen to our leaders. That wouldn't be good. But we do pray that we can have peace, that we can spread the gospel, and that we can have an attitude of authority towards authority, because God has given these men their offices. And we want to take that attitude of respect for authority into the kingdom with us. Now, thankfully, we'll have individuals ruling over us whom we can, I should say, honor, and then we can have the respect and honor for those who are over us then. So let's become emotionally involved with football teams if you wish, basketball teams if you wish, but when it comes to the governments of this world, let's use self-control.